Why don't other Christians understand the heavenly sanctuary in the same way that Adventists do? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host, and my conversation partners are Paul Dibdahl and Dave Thomas. Our topic for today is the pre-Advent judgment.
Maybe you should help us all understand what you mean by pre-Advent judgment and what is the understanding of the heavenly sanctuary.
Particular aspect of theology or thought has several nuances. You know, some people see this from a very perfectionistic viewpoint that the pre-Advent judgment is designed to determine if you have any unforgiven sins, and if you have even one, you're going to be lost. Other people see it more as a means by which the character of God is revealed, and the justness of God in saving people is brought to bear too. So, but that's maybe saying more than I should have at this point. So,
well, what the Adventist background of this has to do with a great disappointment in October 22, 1844, based on the classic Reformation way of interpreting prophecies, historicism. Adventists believed that Jesus was going to come on October 22, 1844.
The Millerites did.
The Millerites did. Sure, there were no Seventh-day Adventists until nearly 20 years later. But the Millerites believed that, and virtually all Christians believed that some great event was going to happen in and around 1843. You know, sometimes we get a bit embarrassed by our history, but if you go back to that time, that was not unusual, okay? After the disappointment, when the Millerites thought that Jesus was going to come and cleanse the earth, then they turned their attention to the heavenly sanctuary. And I won't go into all the circumstances that led to that shift. But in time, a key comparison was made. Now, we'd mentioned earlier that the sacrificial lamb, the Passover lamb, came to be seen as a type for the true Passover lamb, Jesus Christ. See? And our early Adventist forebears followed that thinking. If there was a once-for-all Passover lamb, namely Jesus, then there ought to be a once-for-all Day of Atonement. And so on the model of the Passover lamb, you have the model of the Great Day of Atonement. And that has, I think, yielded some rich results in terms of Adventist thinking and theology, but there are some problematic aspects as well. And I think that the main concern is the impact of the perfectionist streak that you mentioned here. The main struggle has been the perfectionist streak that has given the impression and the title investigative judgment, as if God was going to snoop around to see if, in fact, he could find different things. Mm-hmm. So if you can come to the emphasis, and I think in recent years, for a variety of reasons, Adventists have come to a greater appreciation of Christ's sacrifice for us from the book of Hebrews and from the book of Romans. Romans 8:1, for example, there is therefore now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. That's a terribly important verse. It's not always been easy for the perfectionists to use that verse because they are really not sure that Christ's blood is satisfactory enough to pay the price. So I think that this phrase, the pre-Advent judgment, it's a judgment, but it has more to do with the justification of God rather than justification of human beings. Now, does that make sense, or am I going out on a limb there?
I think it makes sense, but it's, if it's the first time someone has heard it, it would probably be difficult to track all that, but it makes sense.
Yeah. Well, the particular biblical passage for this is Daniel chapter 7, where you have the judgment set, the books were open, and this is called the three chapters are 7, 8, and 9 are pretty crucial in terms of our topic here. But in Daniel 7, if you just watch the thing in video, you have the Son of Man coming with the clouds of heaven to the Ancient of Days. The books were open, and the judgment was set. Mm-hmm. So you have this judgment ahead of time, the pre-Advent judgment. This is, the books were open. We take a look at it. Mm-hmm. I think it's safe to say that the book says, you know, as one of my teachers says, Satan doesn't have to tell any lies about us. All he has to do is tell the truth. So it's laid out here. These are my people. Yep, they made lots of mistakes. but it is God speaking on their behalf. And that's why Daniel 7 is such an intriguing one, because there's a beast there. Now, in traditional Protestant interpretation, the beast, Daniel 7, is the Roman Catholic power. And you have, there's Rome, and then there's the little horn power. So this is a very strong anti-Roman Catholic emphasis.
But that's a very Protestant idea. It used to be a very
Protestant. See, but when you follow through to the end, judgment was given on behalf of the saints.
Yeah.
And so the beast is judged, whoever the beast is, the beast is judged for all the nasty things that beasts do, and those are listed there. But judgment was given for
the people.
The people of the saints. And I think that's an important lesson that we get from Daniel chapter 7.
And you know, I have to tell you, Alden, that for a long time I used to look at this prospect of judgment with some fear until the message of that text sank in, that this judgment is not anti the people of God.
Yep.
God is not looking here for a way to keep people out of heaven.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking for a way to announce that his people are vindicated.
Mm-hmm.
See? And that changed my view of the judgment. I feel a little bit like the people who say, take me to court, you know, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
I feel some collegiality with the souls under the altar in Revelation who are saying, how long, how long until this judgment is given? So that I'm glad you brought that in there, is that the investigative judgment, or the pre-Advent judgment is a better phrase, is not there looking to keep people out.
Mm-hmm.
It's looking to announce to the world that God has acted in behalf of his people.
Vindication.
And he's going to save them.
Mm-hmm.
All the rest of you stand back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You like that, Paul?
I do. Yeah. It's vindication.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you are vindicated by God, by a holy God.
Well, I'm going to try.
You've done been vindicated, if you pardon me.
I'm going to try a word picture here, metaphor. It's not God taking a white, some white cloth and running it down the windowsill of our life to find some fleck of sin. It's instead
and then
God
saying, "Aha!"
Yeah, it's God taking that white cloth, as it were, and using it to cover us.
You know, and one of the most powerful images there is Zechariah 3. And it's one of the very few passages in the Old Testament where Satan comes clear. But you have Joshua the high priest, clothed in filthy garments.
Mm-hmm.
And Satan is there to accuse him. See? And this is where my teacher said, you know, it was Dr. Heppenstall who says, you know, Satan doesn't have to tell any lies.
Yes.
All he has to tell the truth. See? But the Lord rebuke you, This is mine.
Mm-hmm.
And he clothes him in white garments, you see. Mm-hmm. And so you have here, you're no longer in court as the accused because God has rescued you. That's why if you look at the various ways that you look in court, most of us tend to think of being accused. You say, I'm not going to make it through. I like to think of myself in the light of what God has done for me as a witness.
Yeah.
See, if you're in trouble, Dave, I would be willing to go to court as a witness on your behalf. I don't want to go to court. You know, if I'm the accused, that's no fun. But boy, if I can go and speak a good word, and in this case, it's a good word for God, I'm ready to do that.
And you see, if you see the pre-Advent judgment, as it's called, as God announcing to the world that because of the sacrifice and the ministry of Jesus, I am exonerating my people, it's pretty good news.
It is.
It's pretty good news. If you see it as this white cloth investigation, a rub down to see if there's any fleck of sin, you're going to live in fear and trembling.
See, and that was why it took me so long to discover that Jesus was God, because I had this picture of the man on the throne. Yeah. Says, we'll check him over, and all right, let him in the back door. You see, next. It was that
okay,
picture.
Okay, we found just enough reason to let him in. So
okay.
Let him in.
Next.
Yeah. And you know, it was also helpful for me to realize that, and this realization keeps dawning on me to a greater degree as the years go by, is that when you look at the amount, that the resources and the effort that heaven has expended for the redemption of humanity, it becomes really ludicrous to think that the main purpose of God is to keep people out of heaven.
Yeah.
See?
Now, there's one other piece of good news. I mentioned here the strong anti-Roman Catholic position. I think we have to be very careful that we don't condemn someone to judgment on the basis of prophecy. You know, prophecy says this about you, so on. We can talk about conditional prophecy, but there's a fascinating verse in Isaiah chapter 19, 23 to 25. And I'd just simply like to listen to that. On that day, there will be a highway from Egypt to Assyria. The Assyrian will come into Egypt and the Egyptian into Assyria. And the Egyptians will worship with the Assyrians. On that day, Israel will be the third with Egypt and Assyria, a blessing in the midst of the earth, whom the Lord of hosts has blessed, saying, blessed be Egypt, my people, Assyria, the work of my hands, and Israel, my heritage. Mm-hmm. Israel and its two greatest enemies are seen in the kingdom of God.
And Israel is listed third. Oh, man.
Yeah, that's amazing. No, and this ties in with Ellen White's comment once. She says, we may have less to say about the Roman power. And she says, when we study Daniel and Revelation, we'll discover the connection between God and his people is very close.
You know, I do want to go back to the judgment question and point out that the idea of a judgment today is very unpopular, you know. But I think it's very clear in the Bible in many places that there is a judgment. Now, when it actually occurs is, of course, a subject of great discussion. I happen to think it occurs in three phases, okay? Mm-hmm. So there's not like this one singular event, but humans are well advised to bear in mind there is a judgment.
Yeah. And if you're a very sensitive soul, it's very helpful to recognize that if you go to judgment, you have a friend in court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
But there are some tough characters who need more emphasis than others. Well, thank you, Dave and Paul, for your contribution today. Next week, we turn to the eschatological Day of Atonement. And Dave and Paul will be my conversation partners again. My thanks to Chad Ofgerhauer, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.